Part 4, Chapter 16. An Associative Relations Audit as a Means of Transformation. Chapter 6 outlines how the main features of the modern market can be transformed. We will now focus on how small to medium-sized businesses and farms can help accelerate global transformation of the economy from the ground up, one person at a time, one farm at a time, and one business at a time. We will here describe an associative relations audit, a specialized method for assisting with this transformation. Footnote 122. Associative economics is concerned with and depends on building and sustaining healthy relationships. Consequently, this audit focuses not on dollars and cents, but on assessing the quality and types of relationships that are a part of a business or farm so as to promote team or group spirit, integrate idealism into daily operations, and enable an initiative to be more productive. The Associative Relations Audit is a relatively simple assessment tool to provide specific information on a variety of important relationships. The managers of a farm or business can carry it out if they are familiar with associative economic principles. If not, a mentor can facilitate the process. Maximizing efficiency and productivity, allocating resources to where they are most needed and can do the most good, establishing appropriate prices, ensuring a fair distribution of wealth, and achieving adequate prosperity for society all depend on healthy relationships with our fellow beings, the environment, and our own spiritual essence. Current business practices generally give these important relationships a much lower priority, if they are considered at all, than the so-called fiduciary duty of corporate management to maximize profits. The Associative Relations Audit enables an organization to follow a process comparable to that of an individual taking stock of his or her life to establish personal goals and make resolutions for personal advancement. It begins with educating everyone involved about associative economics and the threefold nature of social life as an all-encompassing vision for a free, just, and prosperous society imbued with social and environmental responsibility. It then helps evaluate to what degree the organization's mission and core values are related to that vision. It concludes with identifying time-dated goals to improve various relationships. The organization may work on only these goals, or it may incorporate them into an overall strategic plan. The audit process can also lead to improving or establishing new relationships with other like-minded people, farms, and businesses, which, in turn, helps accelerate the overall growth of a new associative economy. The Associative Relations Audit consists of evaluations of 13 types of relationships that may be part of the initiative. Footnote 123. The ideal situation is when the leadership works through the audit process together with as many management personnel and workers as possible. The more input that is gathered from all levels of the organization, the more valuable the results. The Associative Relations Audit can be helpful in aligning mission, vision, goals, and core values in a very practical way, whether or not they have been articulated in written statements. A small-scale farmer may have a stronger relation on a day-to-day basis to goals and values in his or her own heart than someone working in a large organization has to a written mission statement, which may be filed in a desk or framed on a wall. In any case, the first step is to determine whether the vision of an associative economy as described here finds a resonance with the organization's mission, vision, goals, and core values. If so, it may be worthwhile to consider doing the audit. 13 types of relations and goals for improving quality of relations. The 13 possible types of relationships that follow are not meant to be definitive, but rather to provide a good basis for the assessment of vital relationships. Footnote 124. Not all the relationships listed may be applicable for a given endeavor. The types of relationships that are actually assessed will depend to some degree on the form of ownership and the size of the farm or business. The main questions to be addressed for each type of relationship are, 1. What further steps within my initiative can I make toward the ideals and goals of an associative economy? And, 2. What time-dated goals can I commit to? All individuals and groups are in a continual process of reaching toward their full potential. Working toward specific goals is what matters, not some abstract ideal of perfection. We need to focus on becoming something, evolving, striving, even struggling, not being something or having become something. Furthermore, outer life continually changes, and consequently, the need to assess relationships and make appropriate changes is ongoing. 1. Relations with your customers, consumers, users of your products or service. Goals. As much as possible, develop collaborative relations. Create ongoing opportunities to dialogue and share the perspectives and the situations of both parties, provider and consumer. Get to know your customers. Enable your customers to know you. Be open about your needs. Take a genuine interest in their needs. 2. Relations with your suppliers. Goals. Same as 1. 3. Relations with like producers, service providers. Goals. Seek ways to collaborate with your peers, not compete. Through collaboration, seek to do what you alone cannot do and to advance social well-being. Use combined resources for mutual benefit and to provide more, better, and or more efficient services. 4. Relations of managers and workers to the spirit or being of the farm or business. Goals. Develop and maintain an ongoing educational process for all workers and managers to foster an understanding and appreciation of the organization's spiritual mission, core values, visions, and goals, and how these each relate to day-to-day operations. Create opportunities for sharing experiences, knowledge, insights, and successes in the workplace. Encourage financial literacy and understanding of the business's finances and personal politics. 5. Relations between management or owners and workers. Goals. As far as possible, everyone who makes decisions should do so based on shared perspectives and informed insight. Maintain appropriate respect and civility. Paid labor. Labor treated by management primarily as an expense that needs to be reduced to a minimum, needs to be overcome wherever possible. 6. Relations between managers. Goals. Spirit of cooperation and collaboration. Maintain alignment with organization mission and vision. 7. Relations between management and investors and or board members. As applies. Goals. Management should seek investors who share its mission and vision. Avoid investors who seek only money. Enable investors to know what they are supporting and its social significance. Keep investors informed of developments. Management, investors, and board members need to share a common mission and vision and work toward common goals. 8. Relations to the means of production. Goals. Means of production should no longer be viewed as a commodity to be sold or used for personal profit. Seek legal forms by which the means of production are decommodified. The means of production need to be understood as a commodity asset that is made available to capable people who provide goods and/or services that meet community needs. 9. Relations to the proceeds of an organization. Goals. Establish a fair and inclusive method of distributing proceeds. Establish a living wage and fair income range suitable for the locale. 10. Relations to the natural and human-made environments. Goals. not only minimize negative impact of the operations on nature, but also improve upon the quality and appearance of the work environment and surroundings. Footnote 125. Bring artistic beauty to the workplace. Maintain order in all workspaces and penetrate them with consciousness. Everything and every activity should have an appropriate place. Establish environmentally friendly policies regarding A. types of energy sources, B. conservation, reuse, and recycling of resources, C. enhancement or improvement of the natural surroundings and the aesthetics of the human-made environments. 11. Relations to machines and technology. Goals. Enable workers to understand how all machines and technological devices in the workplace function. Develop a work culture in which machines serve the worker rather than the worker serving the machines. 12. Relations to local cultural, charitable, and volunteer organizations. Goals. The organization, business, or farm should support education, research, and community aid activities that are in harmony with its mission, its community responsibilities, and the vision of an associative economy. Support local community volunteer agencies, such as fire departments and ambulance squads. 13. Relations of management and workers to spiritual development. Goals. To continually improve the character and capacities of all workers and management to be servant leaders in the enterprise and the community. To provide during work time opportunities for workers and management to engage in ongoing education in the fields of work and human and social development. Provide opportunities for and guidance in inner exercises that encourage the development of greater social and ethical capacities. Increased responsibility must go hand in hand with enhanced moral character. Every co-worker should be encouraged to be a leader or innovator in support of the spiritual mission and goals of the organization. The transformation of an organization and the larger economy needs to be accompanied, if not preceded, by individual soul transformation. How to conduct the audit. Step 1. Education. Participants in the audit process should familiarize themselves with the fundamental social law, the threefold social organism, and associative economics. The preceding chapters in this book, other written material, referenced in endnotes, and knowledgeable mentors are possible sources for this preparation. Step 2. Identify harmony and disharmony with each goal. For each type of relationship listed, identify operational activities, ownership forms, social dynamics, and policies in your business or farm that are in harmony with the stated goals, and those that are in opposition to them. For new endeavors, think about goals that can be practically incorporated at the outset. Step 3. Prioritize and implement changes. Make a list of steps the organization could take toward realizing the intended goals. For example, steps in the direction of enhancing relationships that already to some degree work in harmony with the goals, eliminating practices that inhibit healthy relationships, and establishing completely new activities or policies to support important relationships. Prioritize these further steps for each relationship according to short-term and long-term goals, mindful of cost and time constraints or other factors. While prioritizing goals, it is important to remember that achieving the right dynamic balance is vital to every living organism. Just as a person who is a genius in one aspect of life may be ineffective in another, likewise, a farm or business organism may be quite strong in some relationships, but weak in others. This imbalance may have a crippling effect on the whole enterprise and will most likely also show up in a financial audit. Step 4. Set goals and monitor progress. Choose the top priorities for improving each type of relationship according to the organization's means and needs. Then, develop a plan that includes time-dated goals, allocation of time and financial resources, assignments for people who are responsible for achieving the goals, and a method for monitoring progress. Do not hesitate to acknowledge that for the time being, it may not be possible to make improvements in certain relationships, owing to challenging outer circumstances or limited resources. Two sayings attributed to St. Francis of Assisi can provide some guidance for prioritizing goals and planning for their implementation. Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible. Concluding thoughts on the Associative Relations Audit. The Associative Relations Audit process can enable us to shape an initiative or enterprise from within. In doing so, an organization's strengths and weaknesses can be compared to the main features of an associative economy, and a strategic plan can be developed. The audit can also provide an opportunity for team building, through which all participants contribute to identifying and prioritizing goals for the endeavor. And strategically, the audit can be a useful tool for accelerating the transformation of the modern market into an associative economy at a local level. Chapter 17. National Leverage Points. While it may be heartening to observe the proliferation of alternative economic and social initiatives emerging worldwide, some of which are referred to in previous chapters, there are three major institutions that have impeded and will continue to impede any significant change in the more troublesome aspects of the modern market economy. They are 1. Political interest groups, 2. The current political party system, and 3. Government control and funding of education. Nothing less than a major grassroots political movement will be needed to counter and replace each of these institutions. Relentless pressure and strategic planning by organized citizenry are required if we are to hope for significant change in this regard. Footnote 126. Interest groups of all sorts. There is no lack of statistics documenting the flow of money from tens of thousands of interest groups at the state and federal levels aimed at influencing elections and legislation. The federal government alone had 13,746 active registered interest groups that spent $3.49 billion lobbying elected officials on behalf of their agendas. Industrial interest groups play a major role in lobbying and electing officials as well. For example, from 1990 to 2010, AT&T contributed over $45 million to candidates, 45% to Democrats, and 55% to Republicans. Individual candidates show no restraint in collecting funds from as many industries as possible. Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, for instance, collected over $100 million from 12 of the 50 top U.S. industries. Contributing to the 11th Congress during the 2009-2010 election cycle. Footnote 127. This flow of money has nothing to do with the democratic principles of individual equality and majority rule. Rather, such dynamics are better called interest group pluralism. Clearly a degenerate form of democracy that is determined by concentrations of money and power. As explained in Chapter 4, one of the main causes of social illnesses in our times is the domination of economic life over politics. It is hardly imaginable that we as a society can make any significant social change without making a greater effort to establish a right balance of power and jurisdiction between business and democracy. Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton, asserts in his recent book, Supercapitalism, that this is the single most important social task. Keeping supercapitalism from spilling over into democracy is the only constructive agenda for change. All else, as I shall make clear in this book, is frolic and detour. Footnote 128. We should, however, not limit our attention to neutralizing business and industrial interest groups in order to restore balance between industry and labor unions. The area of politicking interest groups is rot at the core of our democracy. One obvious area to begin this transformative process would be a stronger grassroots effort to reform campaign financing. The political party system. Our current political party system consists of two major parties that are intractable opponents. Because their oppositional stances keep them alive and active, they are indispensable to each other. However, in regard to major issues like education reform, corporate bailouts, and foreign war policy, there is little operative difference between the Democratic and Republican parties. The difference in the so-called left and right-wing tendencies of each of the parties are similar to the differences of a ship tacking to left and to right. A planned alternating movement in two seemingly opposed directions that ultimately results in moving forward in one common direction. This analogy holds whether there are only two major parties, as in the United States Congress, or a host of parties collectively exhibiting two dominant tendencies, as is the case in many European parliaments. Interest groups fit into political parties like a hand in a glove. Political parties and their candidates are a thin, flexible covering for interest groups to secure favorable legislation. Election campaigns have become an entertainment farce with as much credibility as so-called professional wrestling. Lying, deception, scripted speeches, personal attacks, unkept campaign promises, backdoor deals, and mass hysteria at conventions are all commonplace and supported by the parties. Through political parties, the modern democratic process has degenerated into a display of some of the lowest forms of human instincts. There is very little room to elect officials or pass legislation without being subject to the political party system. Write-in ballots and referenda are examples of the limited ways at a state or federal level, while the traditional New England town meetings are one of the few additional examples on a local level. These non-party options need to be greatly expanded. Within these non-party forms and processes, new ways of conversing need to be practiced to arrive at decisions that engender trust, respect, and inspired thoughts. Some of the techniques already referred to, such as World Cafe, Goethean conversation, and nonviolent communication, can be drawn upon. The development of a grassroots movement to rebuild our democracy without political parties would undoubtedly require a research and public education phase first. This would include a thorough analysis of the political party system and research into alternative election and legislative processes that are not encumbered by political parties. This phase could be followed by regional conversations dedicated to developing new ideas for restoring our democracy. Using the findings of such research, a strategic plan can then be developed for a grassroots political movement to effect the transformation. Government-run and government-financed education. Reform of government-run and government-financed elementary and secondary schooling is subject to two powerful interest groups devoted to an agenda of self-preservation and profit. The first is big business, represented by such organizations as the National Business Roundtable, an association of CEOs of leading U.S. companies with nearly $6 trillion in annual revenues. Their main goal is to advocate for policies that foster vigorous economic growth and a dynamic global economy. The BRT has been a major architect in government education reform efforts at the state and federal levels for about two decades. While big business has shown support for parental choice in education, the proposals they currently advocate are based primarily on perpetuating the market economy and what is deemed good for economic growth, to the detriment of a well-balanced education. Moreover, their advocacy entails the use of stifling curriculum standards and the overuse of standardized tests. The second major influence on education is teachers' unions under the umbrellas of the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. They are the single most powerful force opposing parental choice in education, especially if it involves faith-based and independent private schools. In recent years, they have opposed every school choice proposal in the U.S. because any legislation that would expand the financial ability of parents to choose schools, especially private and charter schools, which are traditionally resistant to labor unions, will inevitably reduce the ranks and financial base of the teachers' unions. These two, big business and teachers' unions, are the main interest groups who use the government to promote their agenda in education reform through lobbying and funding election campaigns. A variety of other groups likewise seek to influence government education, such as government school associations, school boards, principals, and teachers, and the textbook, computer, food, and student testing industries. With all of these vying and sometimes overlapping interests exerting influence on legislatures across the nation, there is little room for real education reform based on what children really need for their development. For these, and other reasons mentioned earlier, it is imperative that we progress toward a more diverse educational system funded directly by individuals and businesses, a system based on local control, parental choice, and diversity in educational options. The focus of education needs to be on the children and what they require to become independent, capable, socially responsible human beings who are equipped to bring their creative talents to life's tasks and challenges. Educators need to have an open and receptive eye to the future and what each generation has to offer to the furtherance of human civilization. They should not be limited to preserving the interests of certain powerful groups. In short, efforts to renew democracy and build an environmentally friendly, socially responsible, and vibrant economy need to be linked to a citizen-based social movement that advocates universal school choice. Chapter 18, Local Leverage Points. In conclusion, I would like to share a few thoughts and suggestions on how to accelerate the transformation of the market economy toward a more associative economy on a local level. Create convergences of like-minded people and organizations. Over the last few decades, many alternative movements have arisen, each trying to address some specific aspect of social injustice or environmental exploitation. The time has come for individuals in such movements to meet and work together as much as possible. This is essential for the timely development of sufficient force to change the existing economic system. The many possibilities for working together include green expositions and festivals, multi-organizational World Cafe conversations, study and research groups, and collaborative projects. Land donations. One of the major ways that prices are falsified is the treating of land as a commodity that is bought and sold for personal or business profit. Escalated real estate prices are particularly challenging for small and local startup businesses and non-for-profit enterprises. Monetary donations or direct land donations to land trusts are effective ways to remove land from the commodity market and make it available for the community. See next section. Clustering like-minded people and organizations. The development of like-minded organizations can be supported on a local level by bringing them together in close physical proximity. One way to do this is to establish nonprofit multi-tenant centers that provide affordable spaces for not-for-profits and/or local businesses. The Nonprofit Centers Network is set up to assist in the creation and operation of such centers. Footnote 129. They have over 200 centers listed on their website, either in the planning stages or already in operation. Community land trusts are another way to facilitate the clustering of like-minded, mutually supportive enterprises. Originally, community land trusts were established to provide affordable housing, but land trusts can provide for multifaceted communities, including farms, retail stores, light industry, and schools. Green retail and industrial centers that cluster like-minded local and regional businesses offer a way to further increase mutual support and market visibility. Complementary currencies and transparent accounting. Real transformation of economic life cannot happen without the transformation of money itself. Money has come to be perceived and treated as a thing unto itself, a precious commodity to be traded, hoarded, and speculated on. Whoever possesses it and controls its flow has power over others, the power to command the labor of others without equitable reciprocation. Money, once again, must be understood and used for what it actually is, a representation of values, a transparent bookkeeping or accounting system of values being actually created, traded, lent, or given away. We need to learn anew how to create and use money in a conscious way on a local level. In addition to other benefits, the complementary currency movement provides a way for people to re-educate themselves regarding money's role in society, its meaning, and power. Footnote 130. Conduct an associative relations audit for your organization. Individual businesses can deepen their understanding of associative economics and progress toward transformation by working with the associative relations audit as recommended in Chapter 16. Focus on rebuilding the local food economy on an associative basis. Economic life arose and has evolved from agriculture and work on the land. Food production, distribution, and consumption are prime areas to start building a new associative economy at local and regional levels. CSA farms and buy local campaigns are good ways to begin. Footnote 131. After several local CSAs are established, consumers can then associate together and extend their vision of a local food economy beyond a single farm, as described in Chapter 8 on Trans-Sector Associations. Harness the power of art for social renewal. Art has always had the potential to develop inner or spiritual qualities important for social life, including social sensitivity and creative thinking. Art can also be a powerful medium for conveying important spiritual and social ideas. The ideas of the fundamental social law, social threefolding, and associative economics could be expressed through poetry, drama, music, painting, sculpture, documentaries, and so on. One of Europe's most influential modern artists, Joseph Beuys, 1921 to 1986, dedicated his later years to promoting Steiner's social ideas. Capitalization Fund for Local Businesses. Rebuilding local food economies will require new organizations and methods to capitalize local and regional enterprises. The Slow Money Alliance is one effort in this direction that supports local food systems. RSF Social Finance also fosters the creation of local capitalization funds for socially and environmentally responsible enterprises. Footnote 132. Chapter 19. Aligning Pedagogy and Finance in a Waldorf School. In deference to the fact that this book is published by the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, I am including this short essay specifically for administrators and board members of independent Waldorf schools. It suggests ways to begin thinking about and implementing the principles of economic associations within the financial structures of their schools. One of the great challenges to sustainability facing independent Waldorf schools is how to view and work with finances. Many people devoted to Waldorf education are asking the question, is it possible for school leadership to work in the fiscal realm by drawing on the same profound soul-spiritual values, view of the human being, and view of the world that the teachers draw on in the classroom. Apart from its importance for the fiscal stability of the schools, this question is relevant for the pedagogy, because the children will sense discrepancies in the school life between what they are taught and what they hear and see the teachers, school staff, and their parents saying and doing. Footnote 133. This essay explores some specific ways to approach two related aspects of a school's finances, budgeting and tuition setting, to make them more consistent with the spiritual foundation of the curriculum, as well as the social understanding, sensitivity, and skills that the students have the opportunity to learn. Footnote 134. Historical background and modern context. The Waldorf school movement, based on the social and spiritual insights of Rudolf Steiner, arose out of earlier efforts to implement the ideas of a threefold social organism. These ideals call for freedom in cultural life, including education, equality in politics, and fellowship in an associative economy. Associative economics is rooted in the principles of cooperation and concern for others rather than competition and self-interested behavior, which are the main principles undergirding the modern market economy. Steiner maintained that in order to have a healthy impact, economic decisions need to be determined by associations of people involved in the economic processes, including production, distribution, and consumption. Open dialogue and transparency are essential features of these associations. Decisions regarding pricing, quantities, and quality standards are healthy to the extent that they draw upon the insights and intelligence of the participants, rather than being left to the forces of supply and demand guided by the intelligence of a free market or government. Elements of this approach can be found in many alternative social movements today, including fair trade, community-supported agriculture, community land trusts, and social finance. The examples of the associative approach to tuition and finances used here are drawn from the work of the Institute for Social Renewal, particularly the accessible-to-all tuition approach first developed by Bob Munson and Mary Roscoe at the Waldorf School of the Peninsula in 1993. Footnote 135. Creating a budget. Inflated income versus anticipated income. For independent schools, the typical approach to budget creation is to assume at the outset that all families will pay full tuition. The amount of tuition assistance to be offered is based on a certain percentage of the total tuition income. 10% to 12% is often recommended. Footnote 136. For example, if there are 100 children in the school and the tuition is set at $10,000 per child, the overall starting income figure for the budget is $1 million. Let's assume that the amount of tuition assistance to be awarded is set at 12% of full tuition income. The school would then posit that it has $120,000 available for tuition assistance. In addition to this formulaic approach, many schools set a maximum percentage of how much tuition assistance a family is eligible to receive. This is typically set at 50%, which in this example is $5,000. When the initial budget is based on everyone's paying full tuition, it is inevitable that any family which cannot do so is viewed financially as having a negative effect on the school's budget, and consequently as someone who must be sustained by those paying full tuition and/or donors. The resulting division in the parent body, whether it be psychological, class-based, or lifestyle choices, is just one unhealthy approach of this outcome. In order to avoid this problem and begin to work more associatively, a school can change the way it creates a budget by using projected numbers from the outset, that is, by estimating the actual estimated revenue, including tuition from all families for the coming year. A budget that is based on projected income from all families supports the idea that every family's tuition contribution is appreciated and helps meet the overall budget. The school would be worse off financially and in many cases pedagogically and socially if families who can only pay partial tuition were not in the school. If you took the income out of the budget from families who pay partial tuition, the tuition would be even higher for the full-paying families, at least until the tuition reaches the point of full enrollment. It is likely that this more associative way of working will have a positive effect on the school's finances, the social relations of the parents, and the social dynamics in the classroom as well. The budget and tuition setting process. Often the budget and tuition setting process is a closed internal process until it is finalized. This excludes the majority of the people who will be the most affected by the new budget and tuition rates, the parents and sometimes even the teachers. The budget and tuition are then presented to the school community in a finished form. A more inclusive, associative approach is possible as follows. The school trustees, or an appointed committee, begin the budget process by reviewing 1. The current income and expense report, cash flow status, and budget projections for the current year with the business manager. 2. Income levels of teachers and staff in relation to their financial needs. 3. Program, facility, and staffing needs with the teachers and administration. 4. Current enrollment status and projections for next year with the enrollment coordinator. 5. The affordability of any possible tuition rate increases for the current parents, initially with a small sampling of parents, business manager, and tuition adjustment committee. 6. The anticipated donation income with a development director or development committee. Based on these initial findings, the committee then drafts a preliminary balanced budget for the following school year with proposed tuition rates. The next step is for the school to have conversations about the proposed budget and tuition, if necessary, providing more than one option. One with the full faculty and staff, and one with the parent body and possibly selected donors. The parent conversations could be done at an all-school meeting or in smaller focus groups. The more the school understands the effects of the proposed budget on parents and teachers, the more the parent body has the opportunity to understand the reality behind the numbers on the school's side. And the more the parent body has the opportunity to understand the reality behind the numbers on the school's side, the more likely that annual budgets will be supported. Such mutual understanding also creates an optimal social climate for inspired creative ideas to arise for how to increase the overall support of the school. This can help counter the poverty mentality that often afflicts schools. Obviously, it is better to address areas of possible tension openly prior to the budget being set rather than having lingering dissatisfaction and gossip undermine the social climate of the school afterward. This open and informed dialogue prior to making a final decision regarding finance is a fundamental principle of working associatively. Once the budget and tuition are set, it is then possible to work in a healthy way with individual families who cannot pay the full tuition and for the school development committee to plan how to achieve the annual appeal goal. Tuition reduction process. Most schools use a third-party evaluation service to analyze the financial circumstances of families who can't afford full tuition and to determine what they can afford to pay. Some use the third party's determination as the final say in what a family must pay. Others use it as one of several determining factors. In these cases, there is usually no in-person meeting of the school with the applicant family unless the school provides for a conversation in an appeal process. Thus, in-person conversations are at best a last resort measure. In a more associative approach, the tuition adjustments conversation is central to the whole process. The goal of these conversations between families and school representatives is to arrive at a mutually agreed-upon tuition amount after each party is fully informed about the other's circumstances. Footnote 138. During the conversation, the representatives of the school begin by acknowledging and expressing appreciation for the family's participation in the school community. They then share the school budget and financial report along with the mission and vision of the school. This could include a multi-year strategic plan. In essence, they are painting a picture of the overall financial, pedagogical, and social state of the school. Once that is completed, the financial situation of the family is reviewed in relation to its capacity to support the school's current and future needs. This support can, and hopefully will, go beyond simply paying tuition. If donations of money are not possible, the family could be helpful in other ways. For example, in advertising the school's open houses in their neighborhood. The idea is to create a conversational mood that encourages trust and inspired ideas to arise rather than a mood of the competitive market in which the family's goal is to pay as little as possible to the school and the school's goal is to extract as much money from the family as possible. The final decision of the amount of tuition is mutually determined by both the family and the school representatives. The center and focus of the conversation should be how the best education and greatest well-being of the children in the school can be achieved through cooperation between the families and the school. The success of working in this associative way hinges on the ability of the school conversationalists, first of all, to create a mood of openness and trust, and then to paint a sufficiently clear picture of the school's finances, mission, and values, so that parents will freely contribute as much as they can out of appreciation and insight. It is essential that the school representatives take into consideration the family's situation while being equally responsible for the financial goals of the school. Too much sympathy for the family's situation will result in less than optimal support for the school. Inflexibility regarding the school finances can undermine the conversation and elicit an adversarial attitude from the family. Approximately 25 Waldorf schools in the U.S. are working or have worked with this associative approach to tuition adjustment, with admittedly varying degrees of success both financially and socially. The primary factor in success is the ability of the school conversationalists to work in the manner described and to continually maintain these practices. Footnote 139. Working in this more associative way is challenging because it is contrary to the normal way of operating in the competitive capitalistic market, which is based on maximizing self-interest and competition. Nonetheless, for parents, teachers, staff, and board members to make the requisite effort to align the finances with the educational mission of the school is well worthwhile and can only have a beneficial effect on the whole school community. Footnote 140.